a sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 18, 2001, entitled The Pursuit of Happiness. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 2, verses 4 through 9, 1 Timothy 6, verses 11 through 19, and a reading from the present included here. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
And then a paragraph from the Indian novelist V.S. Naipaul in an address 10 years ago to the Manhattan Institute, in which he was trying to capture his experience as one who had come into Western civilization as to what he found it to be composed of. He wrote, "A later realization, I suppose I have sensed it most of my life, but I have understood it philosophically only during the preparation of this talk, has been the beauty of the idea of the pursuit of happiness. Familiar words, easy to take for granted, easy to misconstrue. This idea of the pursuit of happiness is at the heart of the attractiveness of the civilization to so many outside or on its periphery. I find it marvelous to contemplate to what an extent, after two centuries, and after the terrible history of the earlier part of this century, the idea has come to a kind of fruition. It is an elastic idea. It fits all. It implies a certain kind of society, a certain kind of awakened spirit. I don't imagine my father's parents would have been able to understand the idea. So much is contained in it. The idea of the individual, responsibility, choice, the life of the intellect, the idea of vocation and perfectibility and achievement. It is an immense human idea. It cannot be reduced to a fixed system. It cannot generate fanaticism, but it is known to exist, and because of that, other more rigid systems, in the end, blow away." My attention to that paragraph from Naipaul, who was an Indian writer, novelist of international repute, my attention to it came through our Wednesday night discussion class of this fall, in which we've been talking about the present crisis, using the text by Samuel Huntington, The Clash of Civilizations. We've had an interesting discussion trying to discern what is that hallmark of our life together and what its place is in the larger human story. The phrase, the pursuit of happiness, of course, comes from the Declaration of Independence, where we are told in that declaration that we as human beings are endowed with certain inalienable rights by our Creator, the rights of life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And so the pursuit of happiness has become one of those phrases that's so much a part of the fabric of our national life and our own training in civics that we repeat it, but I don't know how often we take it seriously. But it is a phrase that one who came into the center of Western civilization from the outside chose as a significant phrase to express that which is central to the experience of Western civilization, of our American civilization and culture, that which marks our lives and makes them unique in the story of the world's peoples, the pursuit of happiness. Nepal entitled his address, Our Universal Civilization. And Samuel Huntington would challenge that. He would say there is no such thing as a universal civilization. That we should be content with the fact that we have a Western civilization which has its own uniqueness, and we ought not to be engaged in imposing or impressing that Western civilization on the rest of the world. I think there was a time when we felt that way. We have certain values, certain democratic values, certain political insights and experiences that really should be brought to the whole world. But I think perhaps we're a bit sadder and wiser at this beginning of the 21st century to recognize that we are Western, and we have these marvelous values of freedom and of liberty, of the rule of law, our political and economic institutions, the pluralism, the Christianity that has largely informed us because we come from that biblical tradition, the Jewish Christian tradition. All of that has been for us a very great blessing. But we ought to be that with integrity and not necessarily see it as something that we have to bring to the whole world, because other civilizations and cultures have their own integrity and they have their own insights. They live by their own values and visions. I admired Jimmy Carter at the time that he was linking political and economic advantage with human rights in other nations. That was spoken of as linkage, you remember? And he was trying to bring to a broader spectrum of humanity those particular values that we enjoy. And even more recently, in negotiations with China, there has been this dispute about trade advantage as opposed to human rights progress. And in all of that, there's a certain nobility, I think, but there is also perhaps an arrogance that we have the right to dictate to others. And Huntington in his book is very clear about that. We ought to be who we are. What we really need to be is who we are with integrity around the globe, rather than trying to impose what we are on others whose bloodlines and whose cultural lines and whose language unite them in quite another civilizational vision. But for us, Nepal would suggest that the pursuit of happiness is a happy phrase to sum up our national, our cultural, our civilizational experience. The pursuit of happiness. Well, I was the kind of preacher at one time that probably could have preached a strong sermon about the fact that a human being is supposed to be happy. No, let me tell you what you ought to be. And then I could go on a tirade, making happiness look like a rather superficial sort of a goal. And of course, God forgives those who are young and without wisdom. Now, as I think about the pursuit of happiness, I think of it not as a kind of frivolous thing, or the end of self-indulgence and ease and comfort, but rather the pursuit of happiness being a statement about the human person, about that vast potential within the human being to flower and to blossom, to grow, to spread its wings, to chase rainbows, that wonderful potential that lies within us for that marvelous experience of being human, the pursuit of happiness. It's not a sentimental idea, and it's not a superficial idea. It is a recognition of that created potential within the human animal to become a spiritual being, indeed a human being, a being in union and in community, indeed in global community. The pursuit of happiness that unleashes us to live fully and to love wastefully and to be all that we can be, to quote our good friend Bishop Spong. The pursuit of happiness is simply a catchphrase that points to us as the marvelous and amazing creatures that we are. And when I go to the scriptures, I find that the pursuit of happiness has some justification. In that second chapter of Genesis, we have the old story of the creation of the Garden of Eden, and then the creation of the man, and eventually the woman. And we have the human couple in the garden with meaningful occupation in union with each other and in communion with God. It's a beautiful picture. But the word Eden in the Hebrew means pleasure. And therefore, the insight of the Hebrew writer, that insight way back in our own tradition, is that it was the intention of the Creator that the human being live in a garden of pleasure. I have a good friend who's threatened all of his life to write a theology of delight. Now, you see, if you've been in the church all your life, if you've had church experience like mine, you haven't had a lot of stress on the Edenic delight. Because after chapter 2 in Genesis comes chapter 3. And chapter 3 is spoken of as the fall. And rather than taking that as another Hebrew story, which is pointing to an obvious reality, we in our tradition have taken that as a statement of the human condition, fallen. However, what the Hebrew writer was doing in this collage of stories was to say it is the creative intention for the full blossoming of the human being. God intended a garden of pleasure. Now, did the human being respond? Well, no. And in the disobedience, there were all the consequences. But again, you see, that's the old story of perfection and fall. Rather than recognizing what we know today, and that is that we who are human today are the long evolutionary product, the emergence of that animal kingdom, as one of my members of my class emailed me after a certain class discussion this past fall, in which we were talking about the human condition. He concluded the letter by saying, "So, for primates, we're not doing so bad." And that's really a pretty good statement. For primates, we're not doing so bad. Now, if you take it from the other perspective, that we were created perfectly and placed in this Edenic pleasure and then fell from that from which we were driven, then that whole story stands under the shadow of that darkness. But if you see those Hebrew stories for what they were, you have to hear them, and you hear them best if you can sense that the writer was trying to say, the human being, God's creation, intended for delight. The Hebrew writer was aware of the fact that that delight has been terribly messed up. And so you understand as well the story of the fall that follows. But that ought not to take away from the insight of the intention of the creative process to bring the human being who has evolved to a state of consciousness and community, to bring that human being into a situation of unleashing, setting the spirit free, giving the human spirit wings, allowing us to blossom and to flourish. And our civilization, our particular founding documents, our constitutional order, I do believe, more than any other, sets the human spirit free. The pursuit of happiness is one of those inalienable rights according to our Declaration of Independence, an inalienable right from the Creator. In other words, there is no structure of government that has any right to impinge upon the exercise of my human spirit. Oh, society needs some order, to be sure. And there are the rights of the whole that limit my individual rights. Nonetheless, the insight was, those who came from other shores came here in order to establish a democracy in which there was a severe limitation of the government. It was a dismantling of the royal establishment from which they had come. And that setting free of the human spirit is captured in that phrase, the pursuit of happiness. And it's a marvelous, marvelous heritage. Because look at who we are. You are really something. Here we are gathered. Here we are thinking together. Here we place ourselves consciously before the face of God. Here we are able to look into each other's eyes and embrace one another. Here we nurture these little infants in arms and sign them with baptismal water full of promise. And just within the past couple of days, once again at Ground Zero, they came across some remains, a body, two or three, I guess, and everything stopped. And they had developed a ritual. A ritual by which they were honoring the sacredness of human life. We didn't just bulldoze that thing down, for we recognize some other dimension that is embodied in the human. The pursuit of happiness is simply a phrase that expresses our optimism and our hope for the flourishing of the human being. And what a tremendous gift that is. Now, to be sure, just as surely as Genesis 3 follows chapter 2, and that garden of delight can become a garden of anguish, so it is possible for us to get ourselves all messed up and to miss the wonder and the glory of what it is to be human. We can get all caught up in our own little schemes and our own little dreams. We can live egotistically and arrogantly and self-sufficiently and in isolation from one another. If I had read a bit earlier in the sixth chapter of 1 Timothy, it would have had that familiar phrase that the love of money is the root of a lot of evil. Not money or wealth, but the love of it. In other words, the failure to understand it for what it is, the failure to use it for its intended use. For all of the idealism of our Western civilization and our culture, all of that freedom which has allowed us to grow and to blossom and to flourish, all of that will be short-circuited unless it finds expression in justice and in compassion and in community. And so the writer of this letter says, as for those who are in this present age or rich, command them not to be haughty or to set their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but rather on God. And then, as though the implication of setting one's hope on God is to get things right in one's perspective, he goes on, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous, ready to share. And of course, that's also what we're talking about this morning. I wish all of the stories that are the consequence, the ripple effect of who you are and what you do and what we are together, I wish all of that somehow or other could be put up in a great collage before us. Because it would move you to tears to hear those stories and look into the faces of those whose lives have been touched concretely, brushed by angels' wings, mantled with grace. Ah, the pursuit of happiness, the ultimate happiness, is when I come to a sense of myself and am able to give myself away. When I become engaged beyond myself in the other, that's when happiness takes on its depth dimension. I think in the wake of September 11, we've all had opportunity to think again. And once again, there are anecdotes from across the country. The stories of people who have stepped back in the light of that terror that came in upon us, stepped back to say, what really matters? What's really important? For what am I living? For whom am I living? For what am I pouring out my energy and my time? And this Thanksgiving will be a bit of a different Thanksgiving. The most recent copy of Time magazine has a long section on Thanksgiving 2001. If you've seen the cover, it has a pumpkin pie with an American flag stuck in it. So that Thanksgiving must be as American as pumpkin pie, I guess. But it's a good discussion from a lot of different angles. And it concludes with these words. Well, first of all, the paragraph next to the last talks about how many people are volunteering for the Habitat for Humanity, for the National Security Agency, signing up to teach in the inner city in Chicago. On and on and on again. The people who are saying all at once, wait a minute, what is my life? And in what am I investing it? And then these words, which is the final paragraph of that Time report. In fact, when people talk about how their lives and prospects have changed, the context may be fear and sorrow, but the response reflects great hope and resolve. This, too, marks a part of the pilgrim's bequest. Whenever our ancestors came, It is likely they were willing to trade certainty for opportunity, to face a dangerous passage in order to arrive in a better place. This passage feels pretty dangerous now, but it has also given our children new heroes, and our families new muscle, and our beliefs new force. And that is more than enough to be thankful for on the day we celebrate gratitude's birthday. Indeed, Thanksgiving Sunday. What an amazing gift is life. What an amazing experience to be human. What a wonderful thing, the human mind, the human heart, the human spirit. And what a blessing. As someone said, to be born American is already to have won the lotto, if not the silver beetle. What a great thing we have. What a great heritage we share. How much we have for which to be thankful. And let us together, with generosity, setting our hope not on uncertain riches, but on God, continue the pursuit of happiness.